As you can see on the screen, we'll be in the book of Proverbs this evening. If you would take a moment and open your Bibles there to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs is full of very practical advice. It is written from that standpoint in which one might pass along certain truths to the next generation. And so tonight we're going to look at some of those truths that we might pass along. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29 says, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear." What we're going to talk about tonight is our speech. Now, James pointed out that speech can be destructive and speech can build up. It's all in how we use it. This morning we talked about what it takes in order to be pleasing to our Heavenly Father, and our speech comes under that. The way that we talk can glorify God, or for those that know that we're a Christian and the things that we say do not befit a Christian, it can detract from the glory of God. In chapter 5 and verse 4, he said, "Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving." Maybe Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4 is more important now than it has been in quite a long time. We live in a society that thinks nothing of filthy talk, thinks nothing of using very crude and demeaning language. It's hard even to be able to find a television show that is not full of profanity. In my household, we even go so far as to subscribing to a service that will edit that kind of stuff out. And it becomes how evident that that is pervasive in our society when you take a show that used to be an hour long, and because of their edits for language and such, now it's only 45 minutes long. It tells you a lot about how much was contained within just a short television show. And it affects us. It begins to permeate us in such a way that it affects our speech. And the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about our speech, about how we would talk. Proverbs 11 and verse 9 says, "With his mouth the godless man would destroy his neighbor, but by knowledge the righteous are delivered." And then just a couple of verses later, he says, "By the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked, it is overthrown." When we think about the way that our society conducts itself, it does either exalt a society or show how depraved it is becoming. And so let's start with the idea of how speech can be so terribly destructive. And so in Proverbs chapter 12, if you want to turn over there, we're going to look at a few passages. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 22, he begins to talk about lying. Lying is an abomination to God. In chapter 12 and verse 22, he says, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight." And as is the case with a lot of wisdom writings within the Bible, a contrast is presented. Abomination versus delight. Lying is an abomination. Faithfulness is his delight. In chapter 6 and verse 17, Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 17, it says there, "Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers." What are all those things? Well, back up to verse 16. Six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. People don't think much about lying. They even categorize them. Is it a little lie? Is it a big lie? Is it a white lie? Is it something terrible? And so people think, well, as long as it's in that category of just a little lie or a white lie, it's okay. And that's not what the Bible presents. When I used to work in the corporate environment doing IT work with computers, we would have people that would apply for a job, and they would just blatantly lie on their resume. And a lot of times they were sent from these agencies that would, you know, provide temp workers for different things. And somebody's resume would look so good, and then they'd come in and we'd tell them something to do, and they couldn't do it. You're going to show me how to do that? Well, you should already know how to do that. And it would just be absurd. But even when we'd call them out on it, it's like, well, what's the big deal? What does it matter? That's the way society thinks. What does it matter? It matters to God. It matters in the character of the individual. It matters whether we are seeking to be those who can be trustworthy or not. Because the fact is that Proverbs reveals to us that oftentimes the lying tongue, that is born out of hatred. In chapter 10, Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 18, he states there, "The one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever utters slander is a fool." So he says that one of the ways that people cover up hatred is with this system of lying. In chapter 26, a couple of extra verses over in Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 24. Proverbs 26 and verse 24. He explains it in a little more detail. He says, "Whoever hates disguises himself with his lips and harbors deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, believe him not, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred be covered with deception, his wickedness will be exposed in the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on him who starts rolling it. A lying tongue hates its victims, and a flattering mouth works ruin." I used to think that someone really would only lie out of a defect of their own character. But what I've learned through the book of Proverbs is that it's not just a matter of their character, but it's a matter of how they view everybody else. Because if you value somebody, then you want to be truthful with them. But when you don't value them, you don't think twice about lying to them. That's what he's revealing to us. This person disguises themselves, harbors deceit. They may speak graciously, but that's not what's really there. And he says they hate their victims. So in an effort to hide that hatred or contempt, they would disguise their own true feelings. That's going to be short-lived. Proverbs 12 and verse 19, "Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment." And we'd like to think that someone who engages in habitual lying, that they're going to be caught sooner or later. It's going to come out. Some people get pretty good at it. Some people get so good at it, you just can't tell. Proverbs 20 and verse 17, "Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be full of gravel." The one who lies is a person of deceit. And then chapter 21 and verse 6, "The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death." It's just like the thief. It's just like the one who would cheat and steal and do any other sort of thing. Once they're done with one, they're already looking to the next opportunity to be deceitful. They may feel like they're doing well. They're able to pull one over on everybody else, feel good about themselves, but it's just destructive to them and to people around them. It will eventually destroy them. Even if somehow they're able to live an entire life of lies here on this earth, they will be judged by the one true and living God. They will face the outcome. But another type of speech that's very destructive is flattery. It's another one that people don't think much about. It goes right along with lying, because usually that's tied together. Flattery is an insincere compliment. They don't really mean it. It's deceitful praise that is intended to win somebody's favor and even manipulate someone. And it likewise is a source of ruin. In chapter 26 and verse 28, we just read it, "A lying tongue hates its victims and a flattering mouth works ruin." That flattering mouth works ruin. Chapter 29 and verse 5, a man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. Oftentimes, that flattery doesn't really help the person that's receiving it. It doesn't benefit them. In fact, if you flatter somebody and then they come to find it's not true, it's crushing to them. They're downtrodden over it. And it ends up being a trap for them. And one of the ways that Proverbs presents this flattering tongue is by talking about the adulteress. In chapter 6 and verse 24, to preserve you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. Remember how he describes this adulteress that would be so seductive and say all these nice things in order to catch you in their web. Chapter 7 and verse 21, he says, with much seductive speech she persuades him, with her smooth talk she compels him. He says this is an evil person that uses this enticing speech in order to seduce, to manipulate, to convince toward a particular course of action. And so, like lying, flattery destroys both the user and the one who is receiving it. And then we come to gossip. Telling tales, slandering, whispering secrets. Proverbs 11 and verse 13, whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered. How betrayed do you feel when you reveal something that you don't want everybody to know about to someone and then they turn around and tell your secret to somebody else? It hurts us deeply. It makes us a whole lot less likely to trust anybody because we think that they have some ammunition they could use against me. They could go and tell everybody about it. I would be embarrassed. I would be downtrodden over these things. He says, a person who is a gossip is one who reveals secrets. They are not a faithful individual. They betray their friends. They destroy friendships. They destroy relationships. Chapter 17 and verse 9, whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. You might think, well, those that I'm close friends with, oh, we couldn't be separated. Well, if somebody is willing to slander you to them, it might happen. And it would be destructive. Not only that, it creates strife. And when we think about the local church, we can realize how important it is that we not be creating strife amongst each other. But in Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 27, chapter 16 and verse 27, it says, a worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Think about that scorching fire. I mean, we're in the midst of a very hot summer. It's very dry. We haven't had any significant rainfall in a very long time now. Fires are starting to crop up. They're starting to threaten people's homes and their livelihoods and their property. And we realize how dangerous it would be for a fire to begin anywhere in our area right now. But think about that in terms of the local church. Who wants to start a fire that is going to destroy lives and souls and relationships within the local church? We don't need that kind of strife. We don't need that kind of destruction. Going back to chapter 26 and verse 20, Proverbs 26 and verse 20. He says, for lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, quarreling ceases. Let's just stop right there for a moment. For lack of wood, the fire goes out. When there's no whisperer, quarreling ceases. When everything's out in the open, when there's no whispering behind a closed door, no slandering, no lying about each other, none of those things, then the strife goes away. He says this fire is destructive, but take away its fuel, take away what's starting it, and everything begins to settle down. It continues on, as charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body. A good friend of mine, Brother Warren Berkeley, preaches down in South Texas. And many years ago, I started going to a workshop that he and Mark Roberts would put together for those that were preaching and those that were considering preaching. And concerning gossip and concerning complaining, and this kind of dates the story, but bear with me. He said, you sit down with somebody and they want to tell you all about somebody else. And he says he would just pull out, he said, a dime. Can't do it for a dime anymore, much less find a payphone. But he put that dime down on the table and just slide it across and says, let's call them. And all of a sudden, the conversation is over. When everything will be out in the open, the gossip ends. It stops. No more whispering. And so we can reveal the character of the one gossiping and quell those things by simply just bringing them out into the open. And so those words are like wood to a fire, destroying character, destroying integrity. Chapter 11, verse 9, with his mouth, the godless man would destroy his neighbor, but by knowledge the righteous are delivered. Or if you want to turn back just a page or two in your Bible to chapter 25 and verse 9, Proverbs 25, verse 9, argue your case with your neighbor himself, and do not reveal another's secret, lest he who hears you bring shame upon you and your ill repute have no end. We find is the one engaged in such gossip is a hypocrite. That's what they are. They are a hypocrite. And you bring all that out to be exposed, then their reputation is ruined and their gossip has nothing to stand on any longer. And then there's the idea of cursing. Now, a lot of times when we say cursing in our modern society, you would think of just profanity, but cursing in the Bible is more than that. Cursing in the Bible is pronouncing a curse, just the opposite of pronouncing a blessing. In Proverbs 20 and verse 20, it says, if one curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. It's looked at as very serious. Chapter 21, verse 17, just one page over or so, whoever curses his father or his mother shall be put to death. Excuse me, that was Exodus 21, 17. Whoever curses his father or his mother shall be put to death. Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 9, if anyone curses his father or his mother, shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood is upon him. He's responsible for his own fate, for what happens to him. Under the law of Moses, this was a capital offense. In Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 10, it says, do not slander a servant to his master, lest he curse you and you be held guilty. Even maligning a lowly servant could be disastrous. But we can also use our speech for constructive things, to build up, to ease the suffering of others even. And we find the idea of good words, righteous words, wholesome words. We find a couple of these mentioned in Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10. The first one being in verse 11. Proverbs 10 and verse 11 states, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. A fountain of life. And the whole idea with a fountain of life is something about renewal and sustenance. In verse 20, Proverbs 10 and verse 20, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver, and the heart of the wicked is of little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of sense. So you have this idea of a well of life, something that is beautiful, something that is valuable, something that is sustaining. In chapter 16 and verse 24, he says, gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. These pleasant words refresh others and build them up. Have you ever made a statement that was intended to encourage somebody and you just saw their eyes light up for a moment? That's what we're talking about. So it is a sweetness. It is comforting even. In chapter 12 and verse 25, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. How often would we use comforting, wholesome words if we knew that just that little bit could relieve some of the burden of somebody else? That's what Solomon's telling us. You can make that burden a little bit lighter by choosing comforting, wholesome words. It doesn't matter whether they're anxious, whether they're depressed, or even if they're caught in sin, the right words at the right time can make their hearts glad. It can refresh them, and it can turn them toward the Lord. And that kind of goes right along with the idea of timely words. In chapter 15 and verse 23, it says, to make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good it is. In other words, at the right time, those words can have a big impact. I think sometimes we're afraid. We're afraid we don't have the right thing to say. Or maybe in the moment, we're really struggling to figure out what that right thing might be to say, and then later on we're kind of kicking ourselves because the moment has passed. I think the more that we take in the wisdom of God, the more we'll have the right things to say at the right times. I'm not saying we'll get it perfect. I'm not saying that you'll have the right thing to say on every occasion. We sure can make some headway. Chapter 25, verse 11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Again, there's that idea of this beauty and value. How joyful and good, well-timed, wholesome, good words can be. Words that are well thought out. Proverbs 15 and verse 28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Words that are well thought out and can have its best impact. So let me go back to my example. You have some instance in which you struggle to find the right thing to say, and later on you think, I really should have said something. Don't just let it go. Don't just let it go. Take the time to think it out and then give it to them still. It's okay to come back and say, you and I were having a conversation the other day, and I'm sorry that I didn't have something really good to say at the moment, but I've been thinking about it, and now I want to say something to you. Here's what I have to say. You can still build somebody up in those occasions, and I'm telling you that they will value the fact that you didn't just respond off the cuff, but you were still thinking about them and you were still processing those things so that you could give them a good, wholesome, godly response. There is value in that. I value the person who seems to always have the right thing to say at the right time, but I also greatly value those that keep pondering things so that they can come back and say something that is beneficial. That is a wise course of action. But we have to be willing to control our words so that we can have these beneficial moments. Words that benefit both the speaker and the hearer. In chapter 13, Proverbs 13 and verse 2. Proverbs 13 and verse 2. Now, chapter 13 starts out with a wise son hears his father's instruction. His instruction begins in verse 2. From the fruit of his mouth a man eats what is good, but the desire of the treacherous is for violence. Whoever guards his mouth preserves his life. He who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. That is, has no restraint on it. doesn't hold anything back, just says whatever maybe comes to mind. Over in chapter 15, Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1, one we quote quite often, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. A soft answer turns away wrath. More often than not, that works. It works to simply respond calmly and kindly, even in the face of someone else who is angry. It can diffuse the situation. Chapter 21 and verse 23, whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble. Sometimes it's hard to keep quiet, isn't it? Sometimes it's hard to hold the tongue, especially when someone else might be treating us unfairly, maybe even assuming something unfairly about us, maybe even taking advantage of us. But sometimes we simply do need to guard the things that we say. We can diffuse a potentially volatile situation. We can keep ourselves out of trouble. In chapter 10 and verse 19, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. But whoever restrains his lips is prudent. I don't know where it comes from. I'm no expert, but there's something within us that we engage ourselves in talking because there is this uncomfortable silence. We feel a need to say something. And it tends to be that in those moments in which we feel a need to say something despite the fact that we didn't have something to say is when we can get in a lot of trouble. We have to be careful that we're not just saying something out of turn because of that uncomfortable feeling that we might have. In chapter 17 and verse 27, whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. I had a good brother in the faith in New Mexico that there were times when he had a lot to say, but there were also times in which you could be teaching a class and you can kind of see the wheels turning. You can see something that he's thinking, but he doesn't want to bring it up in class, and you understand that. And later it seemed like you wanted to say something, and then he would talk about what he was thinking about. But part of the reason that he didn't always just speak out was sometimes questions that he had or things that he was thinking about just weren't the best for a public setting or might not be the best for somebody else's position in their own faith. But they were still important things, and I valued the fact that he had that type of discretion, that he would withhold those things, but that he and I could discuss them in a more private setting. Whoever restrains his word has knowledge, or that their discretion. Discretion is the word that we're looking for. That is to use that knowledge in a wise way, to discern whether I should speak or not to speak. By sparing words, by having that calm spirit, we can benefit ourselves and others. You see, from Proverbs, we learn the value of just being careful. Careful in the way that we live our life and careful even in the way that we would speak. And that can avoid harm to ourselves and it can avoid harm to other people. It can do good to ourselves and it can do good to others. Maybe that's why Paul was so concerned about the way Christians would speak. Colossians 4 and verse 6, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. To put that in a little bit of perspective, this is the man that had people fighting with him all the time. Just all the time. People were following him around in order to contend with him. And yet he said, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt. Chapter 4 and verse 29, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, fitting the occasion that it may give grace to those who hear. That verse tells us one little question we can ask in our mind before we speak up. Is this going to build somebody up or not? And if the answer is not, maybe we don't need to say it. Maybe it needs to just stay unspoken. We need to appreciate this wisdom that Solomon is giving to us in such a practical matter that affects our everyday lives. But if you're here tonight and you have some spiritual need that we can help you with, whether it's a problem with your speech or whether it's any other area of your spiritual life, we'd like to offer our assistance. We've chosen number 682 as a song of invitation tonight. And so if you have a need, please let us know. Please come to the front while we stand and while we sing.